Right after the start of the new year, the New Jersey legislature approved a measure sponsored by Senator Raymond Lesniak that legalized sports betting at Atlantic City casinos and racetracks in the state. Governor Christie signed the bill into law on Tuesday. A Justice Department decision in late December opens the door to online gambling in states, and Senator Lesniak told the Associated Press, "We can be the Silicon Valley of internet gaming." He was referring to New Jersey and is pushing for legislation that would legalize internet gambling in the Garden State. New Jersey is not the only state betting on gambling to raise revenue for cash-strapped coffers, and it's our topic for today's Radio Times. And we begin with Senator Raymond Lesniak. He's a Democrat from Union, New Jersey, and he has clearly been spearheading these efforts in New Jersey to legalize online gambling and sports betting. And Senator Lesniak, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
I'm glad to be here.
Have you always been a booster for gambling, or do you see this as a new source of revenue in tough times?
Well, actually, I started about 4 years ago, right around this time, Super Bowl, when there was this bust of a sports betting ring in Monmouth County, New Jersey, and it was just so annoying to me that this was going on. And we wasted prosecutorial resources for what people could be doing legally in Las Vegas. And also, at that time, Las Vegas, you couldn't get a room. Meanwhile, in Atlantic City, was a ghost town. So it just seemed to me so unfair that Congress created this monopoly on sports betting and deprived our residents and our casinos and our racetracks of the tourism that goes along with it.
Now, picking up on that, this bill that you sponsored and Governor Christie signed into law on Tuesday does legalize sports betting, but it also sets up, I guess, a court fight with a federal law.
You bet. I expect our attorney general to be in court in a matter of weeks. We have many legal authorities that believe, along with me, that this federal ban that carves out this exception for Nevada and a limited exception for three other states is unconstitutional on many grounds, not only Fourth Amendment equal protection, but misuse of the Commerce Clause and Tenth Amendment states' rights. So we're pretty confident that by this time next year, we'll be able to bet on the Giants or the Eagles in the Super Bowl, or maybe even, surprisingly, the Jets, but I doubt that.
Which is a topic for a different discussion. Assuming all this gets passed and this law then goes into effect, what would it mean for Atlantic City and how would it work?
Well, for sports betting, if we're just concentrating on sports betting, we have economic reports that it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars of revenues for both our casinos and our racetracks. And you know, they'll set up sports books just like sports books exist either in Nevada or in many countries in Europe. I mean, the surprising thing is the NFL opposes sports betting, and yet last year, the Denver Broncos played the San Francisco 49ers in Wembley Stadium in London. People were betting right across the street from that game. So the opposition to this by the NFL is purely bogus. And what it will do is, people like to be where the action is. They love to be with other people, see the bright lights, have the screen cheer, put a bet in on the over and under. I mean, people are betting anyway. We know that. It's all in newspapers, and when you see TV or listen to radio sports shows, they talk as much about who's going to cover as who's going to win the game. So it's just a recognition of what is reality, what goes on. And if we get this, it'll be a big boost to our tourism for both Atlantic City and at our racetracks.
And you hope to put illegal bookies out of business?
You know, they'll certainly starve to death, because people don't particularly like to do things illegal if they have a legal opportunity to do it. Plus, they're always unreliable. You put your bet in, you win, and guess what? They get busted the next day, and there goes your winnings. So for the most part, they'll still exist from time to time, from here to here. But they'll be, for the most part, they will be put out of business.
And how much have casinos in Pennsylvania hurt New Jersey?
Huge. You know, the Atlantic City casinos were fat and happy for too many years, and they really didn't reinvest, and the state didn't require them to reinvest in Atlantic City to build up the tourism for other alternative activities. So, already you exceed the monthly revenues that Atlantic City are getting. So we need to have, and by the way, I'm not concerned that when we win our court case, Pennsylvania will be able to do this if they wish as well. You know, we have a lot to offer in Atlantic City with the beach. You know, we just have to build that up. And it's a $400 billion industry. So there's plenty of revenues around for all states to participate if they wish. But the Pennsylvania casinos, the Delaware casinos, the casinos opening up and the casinos in New York are actually strangling Atlantic City to death.
Now, you've been quoted as saying that you want New Jersey to be the Silicon Valley of Internet gaming. What do you mean by that?
Well, again, the federal government has tried to ban Internet gaming, poker being the most prolific one. I was surprised to learn that there are hundreds of thousands of New Jersey residents who play poker online on these offshore internet sites that are supposedly banned by the federal government. Mm. You know, it's virtually impossible to ban activity over the internet. They tried to do that in Egypt, and it didn't work very well for that government. You just can't do it. You just must have to recognize that it happens, and all those revenues, all that money is going to offshore sites that could be going to New Jersey. Now, no other state is has been willing to take that leap. I did. The governor vetoed it last year. But right. The state that gets there first will be able to have compacts with other states and be the hub of all this internet activity. Again, it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. This would be exclusively run by our casinos. Again, it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars of revenues for them. Again, tens of millions of dollars of revenues for the state. Also, let's not forget about the jobs retained and created. There's thousands there. I want to take advantage of that too, or else, again, we're going to lose out to other states and to the state of Nevada. And that's already happened once. I don't want it to happen again.
Even if we're talking about internet gambling, then are we talking about card games, poker, blackjack?
We're really
bingo?
Talking about anything. We're talking about anything that the casinos are able to run. The big revenue driver is poker. But if they feel that there's a business out there that they can capture, and it helps people say, well, you know, then they're not going to go to Atlantic City. Well, it helps them. It boosts their revenues. It will keep them open and operating. Without new revenues, I'm afraid that a couple of our casinos will have to close soon.
And your idea, and it's still, you know, as you said, was shot down last year by the governor, but obviously you're back on this. The idea is that if you could create an online gambling industry in New Jersey, it would be headquartered in Atlantic City?
Yeah, exactly, as opposed to being headquartered in Nevada. I have to say, though, that Governor Christie has taken a second look, and we're going to be meeting. He is very, very open to getting this up and running in New Jersey as soon as possible. So I'm very encouraged by that.
But what you don't get from internet or online gambling is you don't get people then to go to a restaurant that they might do if they're in Atlantic mm-hmm. City. How do you deal with that?
That's only part of the issue. Without these additional revenues, those restaurants will be closed. Those casinos will be closed. However, casinos aren't stupid. they will comp people who bet online to come to their casinos, to rent rooms, to have restaurants. So it's overall a huge win for them. And that's why they're supporting it so strongly.
And do you see then, that if you can build up Atlantic City, then you can create more revenue and then you get more taxes? Is that the thinking?
More taxes and more investment in Atlantic City, in the infrastructure for the shore activities, for the entertainment activities, and for additional tourism attraction. Without the money, additional money, Atlantic City is just going to bleed to death because it's bleeding profusely already.
Are you, though, concerned with online gambling and assuming people can do it from home, maybe they can do it on their cell phone, that when you make it so accessible and so easy and so attractive, that people are going to be gambling when they really shouldn't be?
Yeah, I am, but we crossed that bridge a long time ago when we started the lottery. I'm a lot more concerned that five houses down from where I live in Elizabeth, New Jersey, is a low-income housing project and is a convenience store right across the street where they sell lottery tickets, and those folks are going in there and using their hard-earned dollars, very, very limited dollars, to buy lottery tickets, and that goes on. So, you know, we made that decision a long time ago. What we will do, though, is dedicate a certain percentage of the revenue to anti-gambling programs and advertisements.
What percent? Have you gotten that far yet?
No, we haven't. We're still working out all the details, but I do expect that we will have legislation introduced, that I will introduce new legislation with the governor's support within a matter of weeks.
But it does look, I mean, just taking, you mentioned the lottery, sports betting and online gambling, that at least from your perspective, New Jersey and perhaps other states as well, more and more dependent on people's gambling losses to run the government.
Yeah, and that's not my focus. I understand that there are some people's focus, but that's not my focus. My focus is that those revenues are going to be go to the our casinos and racetracks that employ people and invest dollars. We're really not looking at this as a budget balancer thing for the state of New Jersey. We're looking at this as a way to save our casino industry and our horse racing industry and save those jobs and create more jobs.
And are you a gambler yourself?
I used to be a big horse player.
Did you?
And I bet a few put a few dollars on Giants games in the past. I haven't done it for a long time. Actually, I do, casino gambling doesn't interest me at all. So you know, I've grown out of that. But certainly, when I was younger, I did participate down in the convenience store down the street from me.
Are you saying something illegal there, Senator Lesniak?
I think it's well past the statute of limitations.
So
but then
saying,
again, I was as Gingrich said is in his youthful indiscretions. But he was talking about when he was 40 years old.
Something
I was
like
only
that.
18. I was only 18 at the time.
So we're almost out of time here. So I guess the next step for at least for this sports betting bill is to take on the federal government.
Yes, our attorney general will be in court, U.S. District Court. Multiple constitutional violations, and since it's only a question of law, there's no lengthy discovery, depositions, or anything like that. I expect that by the fall we'll have a decision, and it'll be a favorable one.
Well, Senator Raymond Lesniak, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
My pleasure. Fine. Have a great day.
You too. And he's a Democratic senator from Union, New Jersey. We have I. Nelson Rose waiting in the wings, talking more about states and gambling. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Margaret Kuo, wishing you a happy and healthy new year. We're celebrating in all my restaurants, 4710 and 2012, the Year of the Dragon, with a special Year of the Dragon menu. Margaret Kuo's restaurants support WHYY.
Since 1980, no Republican has won the party's presidential nomination without a victory in South Carolina. This year, there's a tough battle to block Mitt Romney's path to the nomination. I'm Audie Cornish. On Saturday, January 21st, NPR News will bring you up-to-the-minute results, reaction from the campaigns, and expert analysis. Live coverage of the South Carolina primary from NPR News.
Saturday night at 7 on WHYY.
Sign up now for classes at WHYY's Dorrance H. Hamilton Public Media Commons. Starting February 2nd, learn the art of audio storytelling. Use WHYY's state-of-the-art equipment to combine narration and interviews while crafting a short audio piece on a topic of your choice. For more information on courses at WHYY's Hamilton Commons, visit whyy.org/hamiltoncommons.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY and is affiliated with the Cleveland Clinic's Heart Surgical Program. Their surgeons are performing breakthrough procedures, including minimally invasive heart valve surgeries. Details at chestercountyhospital.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. States are in a desperate search for new sources of revenue. A recent Justice Department decision approved online gambling and has given states another avenue to raise funds. And we are joined now by I. Nelson Rose. He's a professor at Whittier Law School, also a visiting professor at the University of Macau in China. He's a consultant and expert witness to governments and industry on the gambling issue. On gambling issues and the law, and he has a website called Gambling and the Law. And Nelson Rose, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
We just said goodbye to Senator Lesniak, who was positively crowing about the fact that Governor Christie earlier this week signed a bill into law that would legalize sports betting at Atlantic City casinos and racetracks in the state, of course, setting up a challenge with the federal law. Right. But what's the significance, you think, of this law's passage in New Jersey?
Of the New Jersey law, well, now he can go to court and challenge that federal law that prevents any new state from legalizing sports betting. And it is a very strange situation. Here is Congress telling, by my count, there are 9 states that have sports betting, plus Hilai, which, of course, is sports betting. But the Congress is telling the states, it's just like saying, okay, your movie theaters can have sound, but all the other states can't even have talkies. So I think he's right. I think that the court will declare that federal statute unconstitutional, and then there is going to be an explosion of legal sports betting across the country.
He mentioned that there were 4 states, Nevada, Delaware, I think two others, where it is legal to bet on sports, and that's in part of what he's trying to challenge.
Yeah, I've actually, I was an advisor for the state of Delaware in setting up their sports books. They hired me to recommend the tax rate. Hmm. Turns out there's actually 9 states that have some form of sports betting, like the state of Washington allows $1 sports cards. And by the way, one of the things we're going to see under this recent Department of Justice announcement is those states are going to go online. They're going to go on the Internet. But every other state is looking at expanding gambling, and sports betting is kind of the one area where there really isn't much yet in the United States.
And I do want to get to that Justice Department ruling, but I guess with the federal law, the goal is to look for some kind of uniformity, that you can't have, you know, something that's approved in one state and is against the law in another state?
Well, that's what the legal challenge will be. It is legally irrational to tell some states that they can have sports betting, but other states cannot, or in the case of New Jersey, that they're stuck with what they had in the early 1980s. That's like saying you can't have any automobile that was built after 1980. I mean, it's a crazy law. It was pushed through by the professional and sports leagues that didn't like the fact that the District of Columbia, well, now they're looking at it, but it was Delaware and Oregon state lotteries were at the time taking bets on NFL games, and they wanted to prevent any expansion, so they got this through Congress.
But it does look like, and I do want to talk about this Justice Department decision opening the door to online gambling in states, but it looks like states are more and more, obviously, looking for ways to raise revenue. They can't tax their citizens. The lotteries are probably tapped out. And now you've got gambling as a source of revenue for states.
Oh, of course. We are in what I call the third wave of legal gambling. This is the third time in American history that gambling has spread everywhere, and it started, when Nevada re-legalized casinos in 1931, but then when New Hampshire rediscovered the state lottery in 1963, most proposals overwhelmingly fail, except during times of economic crisis. Gambling is seen as a painless tax, and the states, as you said, they can't raise taxes anymore, they can't cut services anymore, and they're not allowed to have deficits. And we've got 45 states that are projecting budget deficits, so there's so much legal gambling already that they say, all right, one more time, one more form is simply not that politically dangerous.
And are lotteries tapped out? And by that, I mean, and there are only so many people that are going to play the lottery and only so many ways that you're going to get them to do that?
Well, the lottery is a consumer item. It's very unusual. It's the only consumer item that is sold by the state, usually. I mean, a few states sell alcoholic beverages, but most of them, it's only the lottery tickets is the only consumer item that the state itself sells, and it's not a great consumer item. People tend to buy it for a couple years and then drop off. So it does require constant promotion, constantly coming up with new games to get, and there just was a study released this week that showed, in fact, it's giant jackpots that attract players, not advertising. Well, the jackpots have to keep getting bigger and bigger, too, to attract people. So, the lotteries are always looking for new forms of gambling, but it's really the state themselves that they're looking for anything that can raise revenue without raising taxes.
And it's, I don't know, I'm always uncomfortable when governments are promoting gambling, essentially, where most people are losers. I think that's different from when private companies, you know, casinos are promoting gambling. People go there because, you know, of their own free will. But something about the government getting you to buy a lottery ticket is a little disconcerting.
Well, yeah, you're right. It's a very strange situation. In California, for example, by law, the state has to spend tens of millions of dollars marketing, but we also have a statute, so we're telling people to go and gamble. We also have a statute that requires tens of millions of dollars to tell them not to smoke. So,
right.
It's even stranger if it was a lottery. If it wasn't a lottery, if it was a casino, because at least with a lottery, the people are playing against each other. With a casino, Kansas, for example, technically owns its casinos, and there it makes its money by beating its own citizens at games of chance.
Mm. Let me ask you about this Justice Department decision that approved online gambling. It goes back to this Wire Act of 1961. What's the significance of this DOJ decision?
It's very significant. The Wire Act was passed as part of Bobby Kennedy's war on organized crime, and it was designed to cut the wire. And what the wire was literally a telegraph wire that went to illegal bookies so that they could find out the results of horse races before players. Then, you know, decades later, the Internet's invented. The Department of Justice needs a statute to try to intimidate people. And the only federal law they've got that covers legal gambling is the Wire Act. And so they said that the Wire Act covered all forms of gambling. It covered gambling as long as the wire goes into another state, even temporarily. And so this stopped the spread of, say, Internet poker. And 2 days before Christmas, the Department of Justice announced it was reversing its position, which is, in fact, it's reversing it because they were legally incorrect, and that the Wire Act only covers bets on sports events. This allows the states to legalize virtually every form of gambling intrastate, and in many cases, in fact, except for sports betting, they can do interstate.
Let me, picking up on that, so we're talking about poker, blackjack, bingo. I'm just thinking of all the games of chance that would be legalized.
Well, the first operators will be the state lotteries. There are 8 states that are allowing people to buy subscriptions to lottery tickets using the Internet. They now can have payment processors in other states, but more importantly, they can sell individual tickets on the Internet. And the big question will be, are they going to go with instant lottery tickets? You put a scratch-off ticket on a video screen, and it's a lot like a slot machine. So every state is looking, these 8 can do it immediately, and every state lottery is looking at whether their statutes authorize Internet gambling. besides doing the typical lottery games and instant tickets, which look like slot machines, they're looking at whether they can do poker and other forms of gambling. And then the state legislatures are looking at, everything else. We've already got internet horse racing, but now they're looking at internet poker and internet casinos.
And that's Nelson Rose. He's a professor at Whittier Law School, a consultant and expert witness to governments and industry on the gambling issues, and the law. In fact, his website is Gambling and the Law. And we are talking about the fact that more and more states are looking to gambling as a way of raising revenue. And we're curious about where you stand on things like sports betting and online gambling. If online gambling comes to be, and it looks like it will, are you going to be one of those people that will gamble online? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I'm curious, Nelson, looking at whether states are going to do this by themselves, or do you see states, in a sense, creating consortiums where they can create these online gambling services?
Oh, they'll definitely create consortiums. We already have multi-state lotteries. There is a federal statute that allows interstate horse racing, so there's pooling of paramutual bets on horse races already. And there's what is called the liquidity problem for poker, where the theory is that you need to have millions and millions of potential players, otherwise people aren't going to find the exact type of game they want, so they'll go to another site. And now that the Wire Act has been said to not cover poker, mm-hmm. what we've got is the potential for the states to not only go intrastate, but interstate and even international.
Wow. And just because that's the way the Internet works.
Well, that's the way the Internet works, and plus for poker, you do need a large body of players to make sure you got a game. If somebody goes online at 2 o'clock in the morning and they want to play $5, $10 Omaha, and there is no $5, $10 Omaha game on that site, they'll go to another site. At least that's the theory on why you need to have a big pool of players. Of course, for banking games like blackjack, all you need is one player and an operator.
And are other countries doing this?
Other countries are so far ahead of the United States that we used to say North America, but now Canada, two of the state lotteries are already operating poker games and other casino games online. The provincial lotteries in Canada are all either doing it or about to do it. All the state lotteries in Europe are doing sports betting. I mean,
wow.
The United States is way, way behind the rest of the developed world when it comes to gambling on the Internet.
But one can assume that there's still, whether it's legal or not, that there's a lot of gambling on the Internet?
Well, there is a lot of gambling, but the Department of Justice has been waging a war of intimidation for many years and quite successful in scaring away players, operators, and payment processors, but what they were using mainly was the Wire Act. And so now that they don't have the Wire Act, it's going to be interesting. I don't think there'll be much of an explosion of illegal gambling because they've actually scared away most of the illegal operators. Certainly the big legitimate legal overseas operators are not taking bets from the U.S., instead, what we're going to see is more and more of the states turning to this as a way to raise revenue.
And are we talking about cell? I mean, one could be gambling on your cell phone going to work, yes?
Mobile phones are actually better than the Internet, than a personal computer, in terms of knowing where the person is, because you don't want to be taking bets from somebody who's in Utah, for example. In fact, if you're the District of Columbia, which has legalized Internet gambling, you don't want to be taking bets from somebody who's in Virginia. And with mobile phones, you know exactly where the person is. With personal computers, the cyber locators, I call it cyber border software, is really pretty good. but it's not quite as good as mobile phones.
Let me see what Fiona from, looks like Ambler, has to say. And Fiona, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm loving the topic. I'm from Australia, and I, in fact, grew up in the betting industry in Australia. I paid for college and worked my way as a telephone betting agent for the Victorian TAB. And, in fact, my mum was also a betting agent and starting her work there in the 70s. And I guess I'm trying to understand why it would be so difficult to get a nationwide but state-based sport betting system like we have in Australia. One of the things you can do in Australia is actually bet on different sports around the country, but also international sports such as golf, tennis, horse racing, dog racing, Grand Prix, you name it. A standard joke for us is if we have two flies crawling up a wall, we'll bet on them. Why can't we do that here in the U.S.?
Oh, that's such a great question, Fiona. Let me see what Nelson Rose has to say.
And thank you, Fiona. I'm actually going to be teaching gaming law at the University of Melbourne in September.
Oh, wow.
Because Australia has so much legal gambling. The quick answer is it was the professional sports leagues, in particular the NFL and the college league, the NCAA, that lobbied very hard and always lobbies very hard to prevent the legalization of sports betting, and they succeeded. And it's the last form of gambling that really, well, it's the last form that's covered by a federal statute, and it's kind of the last form that most of the states don't have. And it's mainly political. It's an interesting problem considering how much sports betting there is in the rest of the world, why the professional and amateur sports leagues are so against it in the United States. In the rest of the world, they make a lot of money by having, like, BWIN logos on the jerseys of the soccer players.
Fiona, thanks for the call to Radio Times. What I noticed, though, Nelson, when talking about gambling, there are people that say gambling and there are people that say gaming. I believe in saying the word gambling because I think that's really what we're talking about. But as someone who's been, you know, looking at this industry carefully, what do you see as the difference there? What are people trying to say when they say the word gaming?
I say the word gambling also because that's really the easiest to understand and correct. The problem with the word gaming, the euphemism, is it's both under-inclusive and over-inclusive. There's gaming that has nothing to do with gambling, you know, kids playing video games. And there's also gaming is a form of gambling as opposed to, say, lotteries, parimutuel bets, wagering. But the reason the industry uses gaming is they don't like the word gambling.
Right.
There's an International Association of Gaming Attorneys. If you call yourself an International Association of Gambling Attorneys, people come up to you and say, well, good luck. I hope you win.
Well, hold on to that thought, Nelson Rose. We have to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about gambling and the states today on Radio Times. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Rutgers Camden supports WHYY and continues its Visiting Writers Lecture Series, 7 p.m. Wednesday, January 25th, featuring a reading by 2011 Pulitzer Prize winner Jennifer Egan, author of the book A Visit from the Goon Squad, which is slated to become an HBO series. Open to the public, the Rutgers Visiting Writers Series will be held in the Campus Center on the Rutgers Camden campus, sponsored by the Rutgers Camden Master of Fine Arts Program in Creative Writing. For details, camden.rutgers.edu.
On the next Fresh Air, Mitt Romney's careers in politics and venture capital, and his ancestors' prominent place in the history of the Mormon Church. We talk with Michael Cranish and Scott Hellman of the Boston Globe about their new book, The Real Romney. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Is the government of Pakistan in danger of collapse? The BBC's Owen Bennett Jones is there. He'll give us the latest. Also, Shalom Auslander's critically acclaimed new novel, in which Anne Frank is still living in an attic, but in upstate New York. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. With the squeeze on state budgets, many governments, state governments are betting on gambling to put cash in their coffers. States around the country are looking at legalizing internet gambling and sports betting. And our guest, Nelson Rose, a professor at Whittier Law School, a consultant and expert witness to governments and industry on gambling issues and the law. In fact, that's his website, Gambling and the Law. We are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. If gambling becomes more convenient, is that a problem or not? Give us a call, 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Paul from Society Hill to join our conversation. And Paul, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to ask Professor Rose a question. It seems to me that the door is wide open now for slot machines online. That's exactly what the state of Pennsylvania tried to do a couple of years ago when it tried to legalize video poker. They did it under the rubric of lottery,
right,
so that every time you'd actually spin the wheel on your computer screen, you'd be, as far as the law is concerned, buying a lottery ticket. So we, I'd like to make a proposition, ask for his response, which is that if this is going to be happen, if we're going to have slots online, and if the vendor is going to be the state who's seeking to maximize revenue, what's the possibility that over time that bricks and mortar casinos will cease to exist? I mean, we see this sort of thing happening with bookstores, with travel agents, even I think movie theaters patronage is at its all-time low because of the online alternative. So what are his thoughts about bricks and mortar casinos really taking a hit?
Paul, thanks for the call. Nelson, go ahead.
Well, that's the big unknown, is how this will impact the land-based gambling. And it's one of the reasons that the casino industry wants to be the ones that own and operate it, rather than have, they're very much against having the state lotteries do it. Personally, I think what will happen is at the beginning, it will actually help the casinos. More than half the people in the United States have never been to a casino. They bought a lottery ticket or two, but they really haven't been introduced to legal gambling. And they're gonna, there's a lot of people who are going to find they like it. And they may say, oh, well, let's go to Las Vegas instead of Hawaii this year on vacation. But over the long run, you are going to find competition. And the big question is which forms of gambling and how much competition there will be. I just spoke at the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States and spoke to a state legislature from Fresno, and I had happened to, for a case, visited every casino in Fresno, a lot of Indian casinos there. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, at night, that is the center of social activity. Families and large groups of people are all going to the casino for dinner and for shows, as well as for the gambling. They can't get that from playing at home. So it won't wipe out the land-based casinos, but it obviously does create competition if it's for people, well, even horse racing. Some people like it because you can get all the statistics in the convenience of your home, but other people like to see the horses run.
And is that why the casino industry is pushing back on this?
Well, the casino industry likes what it is doing and always hates change. So in the 1980s, they were lobbying against Indian gambling and thought they could prevent it until they realized that wasn't going to happen. So then many of the companies said, well, if we can't beat them, we'll join them and run it. Now, they've been, up until about 5 years ago, they were absolutely against internet gambling. Now they're in favor of it for the most part, as long as they're the ones who get to run and own and operate it. Unfortunately for the casino companies, there is so much legal gambling in this country that it's clearly one more form is not politically dangerous, but also there are now entrenched local operators with a lot of political power. This is the reason that the casino companies want a federal statute. They don't want to be competing in 50 states against 50 very powerful local operators for very limited number of licenses.
So I'm assuming there's going to be a fair amount of lobbying on this issue.
Well, there always has been. I mean, one of the most interesting things that developed is Joe Barton, the famous conservative Republican from Texas who apologized to BP when British Petroleum had the big oil spill in the Gulf. He has now entered a bill to have an act of Congress legalizing internet poker, and is soliciting money from the industry. And I'm in a little bit of a controversy with some in the industry, because I said Congress is never going to vote for this. Congress isn't voting for anything. So the chances of them legalizing this Congress in a presidential election year, legalizing internet gambling is zero. By the way, there's also no chance that they will outlaw it, because it's a states' rights issue, and the states are desperate for more forms of money. So the Congress isn't going to tell the states, sorry, we are telling you what your public policy on gambling is going to be.
Final question to you, Nelson. Rose, do you gamble?
Personally? I used to, and then I found out there's a lot more money on the other side of the table.
I know. It's funny how that's a hard lesson for many people to learn.
Yeah, and in fact, I always recommend that people never take credit cards. They don't have lines of credit. Bring cash with you, and if you win, terrific. And if you lose, you're not hurt very much.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Great. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Nelson Rose, professor at Whittier Law School, and you can check out his website, Gambling and the Law. Joining us now is Timothy Fong, an associate professor of psychiatry and co-director of the UCLA Gambling Studies Program. And Timothy Fong, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. We've been talking about the ways that states are trying to figure out how to legalize online gambling and sports betting. We wanted you to join us to look at this issue from a different perspective, and I guess the perspective of the problem of gambling addiction. Is gambling meet the definition of addiction?
Oh, absolutely. You know, pathological gambling or gambling addiction, it's a serious psychiatric disorder, and it's not a small problem. We know that nationally it's about close to 2% of the general population, and economic costs have ranged as much as $30 to $40 billion in lost revenue to Americans each year. So it's a hidden addiction. It causes all sorts of problems in the home, suicides, drug abuse, child abuse, domestic violence, loss of employment, loss of insurance. And so it certainly is a significant addictive disorder.
But do you think if gambling becomes more available online, for instance, that more people will become addicted to it?
You know, there's always been a lot of fascinating to me, there's been a lot of controversy in this area, but to me it's not. I mean, fishermen go where fish are. And we know that when you introduce new gambling in any market, you're going to increase the number of patients with gambling addiction. It's just basic math. The more people are gambling, the more likely you're going to find and expose those who are genetically vulnerable to develop this addiction. So, absolutely, I think that if you expand gambling, you'll see more gambling addiction. But there's this myth. We already have online gambling. Isn't the fact that it's not zero right now? There's, you know, thousands and thousands of Americans still gambling online today. So I think that's oftentimes a misnomer, where we forget that when we put in more gambling, well, we already have online gambling, and we've had it for the last 10 years.
Take us inside the head of a gambler. What are they thinking? What are they saying to themselves as they're gambling, perhaps winning, perhaps losing? What's going on?
Well, you know, inside the mind of someone with gambling addiction, you know, it's a wide variety of different thoughts and feelings. But ultimately, because it's a brain disease, you know, these are men and women who are suffering in their thoughts. They're having preoccupation and urges, pathological views on gambling. They're having distortions on gambling. It's not entertainment. It's not fun. It's not recreational. It's harm, it's suffering, and it's a feeling that you can't really capture. And I think oftentimes people fail to recognize that, and they're like, when they look at someone with gambling addiction, mm-hmm. they don't see the signs or symptoms. But when you talk to them what it's like inside their head, they're really suffering with those urges and that inability to stop, that loss of control that just eats away at them.
Shame?
Shame, guilt and shame are profound. I mean, one of the things that patients come into the treatment is that the shame is so much more than with drug and alcohol. Because they can say, well, you know, I was high, I was stoned, I was drunk, that's why I did that, quote, stupid thing. But when you gamble away $20,000 in a single evening and you're stone cold sober, then you have to say, well, I really don't have anyone or anything to blame other than myself. And I think that oftentimes really stigmatizes the issue so much more.
So when you say brain disease, what do you mean by that? Then I do want to get to some callers.
Sure, absolutely. So just like any other form of psychiatric condition, we now know there are some biological changes in the brain of pathological gamblers. These are genetic changes, these are neurochemical, neuroanatomical differences that research is beginning to show how these brains work differently. Mm-hmm. Now, I like to avoid the word damage because that's kind of pejorative, but in many senses, their brains aren't working in a normal, rational, natural way to respond to gambling behaviors. So when we do MRI scans, when we do neurocognitive testing, when we do other forms of, quote, objective tests, we can determine that pathological gamblers perform differently. So therefore, there have to be some biological and psychological changes in the brain.
And what's the treatment?
Well, the treatment, like any other addictive disorder, is really a comprehensive set of treatment from the right medications, the right kind of therapy, the right kind of support, the right kind of structured activities. It really involves biological, psychological, and social treatments to really help people get better. I think of recovery from any addiction as a very simple definition. It's doing a voluntarily maintained lifestyle of citizenship, sobriety, and productivity. But, you know, treatment is more than just saying, I'm not going to go gamble. Mm-hmm. It's all these multiple aspects of things that people need to get better.
Let me see what Craig from Long Beach Island has to say. And, Craig, you're on Radio Times. Go ahead.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I am a member of a 12-step program. I did have an addiction to painkillers, and I've been in the program for 3 years. I was wondering if people who have a predisposition to, let's say, alcohol or drugs, let's say they recover. Do they have a predisposition to gambling? And then do they switch addictions? I had a friend who won the lottery in California, the big spin, and within 3.5 years he was bankrupt and killed himself.
Uh-huh.
And he couldn't stop, so it wasn't about the money. So what is it psychologically, intrinsically, what's it about?
Well, Craig, that's a great question. Timothy Fong, go ahead.
Yeah, well, great, Craig, thanks for sharing with us with that. And this is why addiction is a broad disease, and it's not just one format, drugs, alcohol, or gambling. It's the same disease. It's just different targets. We know it's the same brain. All those rewarding behaviors, drugs, alcohol, gambling, money, sex, shopping, they affect the same brain regions. And so we know when somebody stops one form of addiction, there's still this disease that has these symptoms of avoidance, of guilt, of shame, of inability to cope with stress, and that oftentimes they turn to other things that are instantly rewarding to fill up that void. That's why we see when our gamblers stop gambling, they pick up alcohol, or when our alcoholics stop, they pick up sex or gambling. So really, I think the important issue is that in treatment that all of these things are addressed. And we haven't really realized that for, until the last few years, we realized the importance of treating all addictions at once. For instance, so common in 12-step is smoking. Well, we know that if you continue to smoke while in recovery, the likelihood of you going back to using drugs, alcohol, gambling is still much higher than if you stop altogether.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's a real shift, and we're really trying to teach providers and patients and families to say that addiction isn't a singular, specific disease to one thing. It's a whole disease, you know, that can be targeted at anything where there's instant rewards and then a rewarding effect right away.
Craig, thanks for the call. Let me get Barb from Quakertown to join us. Barb, go ahead. You are on the air.
Hi. With all of the advertisement and media that's out there with the casinos that's creating all of people with gambling addictions problems in recovery, my fear is that this is just going to make it a whole lot easier for people to gamble and a whole lot more people coming to Gambler Anonymous meetings.
Barbara, I appreciate the call to Radio Time. And Timothy Fong, we've been talking about, you know, the legalizing of online gambling and sports betting, the fact that states are getting into this, and then there will be advertising. And if it becomes sort of more ubiquitous, does that create more problems for addicts?
You know, it's one of those questions that I wish I had a simple answer to. We know that, for instance, in other countries, when they introduce gambling, they often also introduce a lot more efforts for treatment and prevention. And those countries, just like New Zealand and Australia, have basically shown that when you introduce more gambling, you can keep the gambling addiction rate the same or lower as long as you have treatment and prevention programs along with it. So one of the things that we're really trying to emphasize is that, well, if we can't stop the expansion of gambling, or if the thirst and demand for gambling is what the public wants, well, there ought to be, you know, parallel growth in the treatment and prevention area of gambling addiction. So one of the things that we look at is, well, anytime that gambling bills or expansion are on the table, what provisions are put in there to protect the general public by having more treatment and prevention dollars? So I think that's a real key issue to help minimize that. I think the advertising, again, that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to drive people to go gambling. You know, and again, when we take a step back, the majority of people who gamble do so recreationally and socially, and it's fun and it's entertainment. I think with online gambling, it's particularly a little bit different, where if you do that, are we going to see a lot of tourists flocking into your state to do online gambling? I don't know if that's true or not. And so, for instance, if one state
Timothy Fung, I hate to do this only because they're playing my song, which means we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No problem. And he's co-director of the UCLA Gambling Studies Program. We appreciate the phone calls to Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to learn more about the program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show, was produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. Emily Bryant, our intern this winter semester. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.